One of the things that she mentioned with the hands reminded me of something from another field, and that's martial arts. I do Taekwondo, and it was explained to me early on, when I'm doing martial arts work with my hands, that you're most powerful when you're working within a box right in front of you. And that fits exactly with what you were describing. You're going to have less strain, so maybe we need to be follow our martial artist folks and make sure we're working in the box in front of us. So now, for some more solutions, it is an honor to present Dr. Jones. Dr. Jones, I've met with at the AMA. We both share issues with regard to ergonomics and how to help our colleagues. And she actually is involved with the engineering side of trying to help folks. Dr. Jones.
Thank you so much. It's a real honor and privilege to be here, and I'm so glad that the House of Surgery is looking into how they can improve things for their membership. I think it's really going to help patients in the end to have more of the surgeons be trained and be able to have a full and robust career and a healthy career free of injury. And that's what we're really all here about, at least in this session today, and hopefully as a global medical community. So, I have to show this, the disclosure slide. So, I do have a small engineering startup that focuses on this issue, so I just wanted to make sure I disclose that, but it's not really a commercially active product yet. We just have some patents, and we're working on the thing, so I just wanted to make sure that that was available. Otherwise, I don't have any commercial interest, but I do have a professional and personal interest in trying to help you. So a lot of people don't know what occupational environmental medicine is. We're a specialty. It's a small specialty, but we're kind of tiny and mighty. And we're able to, our charge is to really be able to help the worker be able to function and at an optimum level and return to work if they're injured. So people don't realize in the United States about 80% of the U.S. health dollar is billed onto a medical policy, just a personal medical policy somebody has. And the other 20% is workers' comp policy activity, either through surveillance or onboarding doctors or treating injuries or maintaining that through drug testing and other things. So it's really significant in terms of how much we're spending as a part of our national economy. So, in addition, I have a biophysics background, and I'm also involved with the American Society of Safety Engineers. It's now Safety Professionals, so I'm helping with their American National Standards, policies for occupational environmental medicine to rewrite that. It's called the Z10 standard. So, basically, I just wanted to highlight the objectives for my talk. So we're here to try to learn about things that physicians could do from an educational standpoint to improve things. We'll learn about ergonomics. I know it's been reviewed several times here. Some different concerns and things for, injuries, how prevalent it is for surgeries, and what can be done about it, just personally and then also institutionally. I think we had some questions about that earlier. And then how you can engage to help yourself or others in this journey. So ergonomics, I know you've seen this, but it's from the Greek word ergon, meaning work, and nomia, meaning natural laws. And, you know, there's a lot of natural laws that are in play all the time, right? Like we can't turn off the gravity machine. And as long as we're here on this side of it, I can't turn off the aging process. So those are all part of what's happening and in play, in addition to just the environmental interfaces, user interfaces for your equipment, larger room components, and furnishings in an OR suite. So I know we reviewed through several of our great co-speakers here. Some common injuries for surgeons are the neck, back, wrists, and shoulders. That's where we really see a lot of the pain and strain type injuries, and then also those can progress to more serious herniations, or these types of things where people can't, function and use their upper extremities to how they want, and that has a direct impact on how they're able to see patients. So some of the neck situations are high risk, often because of the different ways that we're interacting in the OR setting. We carry about 2/3 of our body weight from our hip up. People don't realize that. So when you're anchored and standing and bending forward, that puts a real load on your lower back. And if you're in a stand position, or in general, we take in about 80% of the information to keep our balance from our eyes. So our natural tendency is when we go forward is for our eyes to keep the horizon. So this, in addition to the work that we're doing in front of us, this is another thing that's going on that puts us at risk when we're doing surgical procedures in standing positions. These can also be, you can see here, I chose ophthalmology because they use microscopes. I know a lot of other professions do. But you can see how they're having to go into the forward bending posture that the other physician was saying is so common and can cause problems. They do this all day, every day. This is a part of what you have to do if you're an ophthalmologist. And there's really no reason, I think, why that piece of equipment looks so similar to the patent, the original patent that came out in the late 1800s and early 1900s. We could do a lot to improve that, and we just haven't. So another area that we see a lot of problems is thoracic and lumbar spine, and again, that's from that direct bending. So, and then it translates up to the cervical spine in addition, because you're in that forward projecting posture to do a lot of your work. So we see problems with the wrist complex, natural motion of the wrist. Oftentimes the direct equipment handles really aren't structured for utility and economy of motion for different hand sizes and also for aging hands. And sometimes they're just designed wrong for how you would use. You would never use the tools that you guys are using in OR suite and industry for very long without getting hurt. So I just think that it's a privileged space, and there hasn't been a lot of attention paid to it because of that. And also, I think maybe there's some cultural attitudes where, as part of training, pain is just weakness leaving the body, or these types of terrible thinking that you get kind of drilled into you. No pain, no gain. It sounds a lot like what we see with athletes. And so, we sure spend a lot more money as a society on trying to help athletes than we do our medical athletes. So, ergonomic force and physical risk issues identified. So I know these have been spoken about already, but there's limited ergonomic training knowledge or skills to self-regulate during training and over a full surgical career span. So as a society, when you really try to look at the literature, there's not so much. And why is that? I mean, the only thing I can figure out is we don't really fund research in this area. Okay, I think we've kind of gone through this transition where in the last, maybe before the last 10 years, a lot of people were independent practice, owner-operators, and there's a political situation when that is when you're an owner-operator of your practice, these situations aren't filed under, you don't carry a work comp claim on yourself if you own the practice. That's under your individual medical, okay? But when you become employed, all of a sudden that shifts to it's a workers' comp injury. So I think just in general, we haven't invested a lot, and that's a problem when you try to look for literature, questions for industry or for individuals on why isn't anybody listening to me? Where's the data for this? It's kind of sporadic. So you guys are in a lot of forward bent postures you have to, reach in addition. So you're additionally loading with weight forward, and the axial load is increased when that happens. When you're in the box, like Dr. Welsh was saying, you kind of have a 1-to-1 lifting ratio. You're right here. When you reach out about a foot, it's a 1-to-3 ratio, and you're reaching out like 3 feet, it's a 1-to-6 is how much more that weight is. And you have to think about those pieces of equation because it's really hard to do that. But with many of our patient populations, especially with the obesity epidemic or other situations, you might be in a situation where you have to reach that far to be able to do your work. And we need to maybe try to engineer something better for people so that that's not so common. So trying to maintain, you have to maintain non-neutral postures for long periods of time. There's no time or breaks within cases or between cases for your body to rest or for you to do the micro stretch breaks or macro stretch breaks for your resiliency. There's also a lot of pressure in an employed situation to produce RVU because many of us are on production. And so it's not really factored in that this is an important part of what you should be doing in addition to prevent an injury. So as we highlighted, there's poor equipment design with low adjustability for various body sizes, shapes, genders, and ages. And there's the unchangeable device interfaces, and there's been little equipment modernization for indirect or direct visualization tasks. So as I highlighted, when you're now an employed physician, this is now becoming more part of the fore. We also have an obligation in educational settings to be able to teach the next generation better. So data will help us do this, and applying some advocacy, I think, will help do this. So basically, it kind of comes down to some positive life changes in addition, and you have to think about that. So here's some proactive life tips. I know we talked about them already, some of them, but let's see here. Staying in the best physical strength you can and health. I know a lot of physicians I talk to, the last physical they had was when they did their onboarding physical in occupational medicine. They're just kind of like, I'm just going to hang out here. I don't want to know. I'm going to wait for the big one to happen. And it does happen. About 15 to 20 years into your career, something bad is going to happen that you didn't realize you were a ticking time bomb for. So try to avoid those catastrophes, I think, is really important. And you have an obligation to yourself and the patients to do better. Use your health insurance. You know, generally doctors have really good health insurance if they're employed at a hospital. It's just they don't take the time, or they're afraid to go see, make formal appointments and go in and be a patient. And I think we need to kind of get over that and to try to, improve in that manner would be great. So I think identifying the different types of equipments, like where you're experiencing the most pain, what types of cases you're experiencing the most pain, and then maybe proactively trying to prevent doing as many of those in a row, or see if you can vary things just with scheduling can make a difference, or automatically integrate that. So I know there was a little bit of a question earlier, you know, what can we do? What can the College of Surgeons do for us? And I just wanted to highlight that actually there are protections. Like, most countries have protections, and they come under in our country, the OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which is a part of the U.S. Department of Labor. So we have a federal version of this and a state version of this. And they're obligated to prevent injuries and to also report and try to correct for these and keep track of them. And businesses, if they're licensed, they have to carry that work comp policy. And if an injury is to a certain extent, they have to report it. And you know this, right? Because if the blood and body fluid exposure, I don't know if you've ever been through that where you had a needle stick or something splash, you have to go report this. And that's a recordable in most cases. So there's also a lot of anti-discrimination statutes for disability, illness, age, and gender, and people aren't thinking about that piece of it that could be activated, and a lot of employers might not be thinking of that either, but you do have protections. You don't have to suffer in silence. So understanding and keeping documents at your home in regards to your short and long-term disability policy and coverage. Your employer might carry something on you, but if you are accidentally disabled, you know, what do you have? Is it going to replace your same income, or is it a general policy that you're using? Those things are really part of your health and well-being that people, it doesn't occur to people to think of when they're in these employed settings. So understand the obligations and responsibilities for a statute of limitation and reporting so that you're not missing anything or disadvantaging your case or situation by just error of an omission. So understand what's in the employee manual and for process on how you report work injuries. And I think also just finding somebody who's trained in occupational medicine who wants to advocate for you, finding great physical therapists, I think is really important too, so that you have a team on your side, just like an athlete would have if you were on a pro football team or a basketball team. You have to think of yourself like that because you are. So this is how we approach trying to, remove barriers or align interests to reduce injuries. So the best effective thing we can do is to try to completely engineer out the situation. And that's where I think we haven't, because we don't have this data on, you know, who's getting injured, why, and what are the statistics. We don't understand maybe where to apply, change. So you can have administrative controls too, where they can say, don't do this, do that, and there can be some policies. Those aren't quite as effective because, you know, sometimes they're engaged, sometimes they're not. That's more of a group thing, and sometimes that can be challenging to follow or track. And the last piece is, you know, personal protective equipment. So that isn't the best way to go. So we need to kind of maybe go for that higher engineering control situation so that it's already neutralized out and people have options before they even initiate a case, so they're not facing those risks. So this is the act that I was talking about. It is a act. This is the general duty clause of OSHA. So that does cover, I know the question from the fellow from Canada. I think you guys have Canada OSHA also. I'm not sure provincially how that's handled or how federal standpoint, but that could provide an impetus to go forward. Like, you don't have to generate a new policy. It already can fit under there. The interesting thing people don't know is this is very general, so they're required by law to orient and familiarize any worker on the premises to any risks, health risks or injury risks they might face doing their job generally, but they're required by law to educate people who have a higher risk to the highest degree of risk they face. And that's where I think they're failing in the hospital setting because we don't really know how to do it. We can do it for an individual and go in if they have a need and it's reported as an injury and I can put an action plan in place for an individual. But we really haven't gotten or leveraged these types of policies and laws that are in place. So I just wanted you to be familiar. Federal is one thing that covers the whole U.S., but some states like California, my state, they can have a higher degree of OSHA in place as long as they comply with all the federal statutes. So that can be an additional lever. Joint Commission does have some ergonomic statutes, as does the ISO certification. And so you need to think about that because how the hospitals are certified, right? They're licensed bodies and have to be accredited through deeming authorities, you know, HHS will say, okay, Joint Commission can say you're deemed worthy of taking federal money, and now ISO has done that, right? So DNV has come in for a lot of these. They do have things in there. They're just not auditing to that standard, but you could ask for that to happen. So there's regional OSHA offices everywhere. This is what sometimes OSHA might be able to do in general industry. They'd be able to come and do an audit or inspect. They're able to come in the premises of any location, a business. If there's been a complaint filed, the complaint could be anonymous, and all it takes is two people to complain, and they'll come in and audit or look at any business over 15 people. So this in general industry is what we'd be looking at. You can see that there's hazardous job settings, so they'd be looking specifically to try to audit for people who are in forward bent positions for longer periods of time. Usually the cutoff's like 1 to 2 hours if you have to do that within a day. I mean, think of things that Maya is doing or Dr. Welsh is doing. You know, you're certainly doing that more than a day, and they say, well, and no more frequently than this in a week. So compared to a general industry worker, you have risks. I'm just kind of pointing out that you don't have to reinvent the wheel on some of these things. So this is the hazardous area for job checks, and then this is kind of more the caution zone. And you can see on here, this is for general industry. Don't some of those kind of look like what you're doing if you kind of squinted at it and think, oh, that kind of looks like if I was bent forward into a case looking in a wound or these types of things. So this is what they would go in and cite a location for, and they would have to mitigate that in general industry. You deserve the same thing. It's just that the operating setting is very privileged space, and people aren't used to asking for help, but that could be activated in there. So these are just kind of to familiarize you. I try to include these just for reference so you don't have to dig and kind of think about what I was talking about. But these were the goals of an ergonomic process if it was activated and what they would be looking to inspect. That's just general principles. I imported that for you. And then this is a commercial available site online. There's many. This is a competitive industry where they go do ergonomic assessments. People make money doing this, and you could have them brought in, or you could use in-house service like a physical therapy department to do it. But you could say at a department level or a safety committee department level, hey, we're really wanting to look at this. We're noticing we're training a lot of people. We haven't ever done this, but we want to have something that's kind of a strategy where we look at it now and then every few years or if there's a major incident so that we're compliant with the OSHA standards for this. And this is kind of how you would go about doing it. And this is more of a team approach. So sometimes you can influence administration if it's not just, you know, the surgeons want this. A lot of it's more team medicine now. So nurses are disproportionately affected. Medical techs who have to lift and help maneuver large pieces of equipment are disproportionately affected as part of that healthcare dollar at hospitals and who's getting injured and how expensive it is. And that affects profit and stability of the organization and how much they have left to take care of patients. So it really all does come down to patients and meeting their mission. So there's also this is from the OSHA website. There's some great resources on here. At least you can start so that they're just not thinking, oh, they're just coming up with something on their own, the surgery department, I don't know what they're talking about. You can refer to this and find this as a resource and start highlighting it. They even have a point in there where you can click through on here that has a surgical suite. They have a virtual reality version of this that you can click on now. It's kind of comprehensive. People just don't know it's there. And you can see that little icon in the top part that says Alliance. One of the things OSHA can do from a mandate standpoint is they can do public-private partnerships to address a certain industry that has problems. So maybe that could be a direction for us to go to initiate that and do it more just specialty-based or other things. If you can look at these resources, if they're not adequate, that could be part of the planning and strategizing. So this is a picture on OSHA, and people think, oh, gosh, why is Dr. Jones showing me the sit posture? Well, in addition to being in the OR and doing your work, physicians spend an enormous amount of time in a seated desk position trying to do screen time work, right, because we're entering data into EMRs. And people, you know, this is just to highlight some of the things you could ask for an ergonomic assessment of your general workstation. And people don't think of that because even loads here where this is inappropriate compound the problems that you're having in the OR setting because it's your body never gets a break from it, right? So believe it or not, some of the things are covered under the American with Disabilities Act, and that was put in the 1990s. This is when this passed. These are actual people who got out of their wheelchairs and lobbied Congress and climbed the steps with their arms and on their hands and knees to get this passed. And this does have some advocacy help for you. And it's not as if you're severely disabled, but if the disability impairs what you're able to do for work is a factor. Disability where you have problems bending is one of the things that there's precedence and claims for. So it's an additional component, and I think we just need to leverage every tool that's out there. So this is an example. It's kind of a cutaway 3D, where you can see through it. But you can see some of the things that were talked about in terms of what you want with your desk are shown here, where that screen is right in front of you at eye level. Your back is against that chair, and it's comfortable. It's an intuitive way that chair moves with you. There's armrests that are in place. There's a neutral posture for your elbows and wrists so that you're not, cocking your wrist up. I see so many people right now, they'll have their keyboard, and the first thing they want to do is put those tabs down and then have it like this. Well, why would you do that? Because your wrists are at an angle, right? So if you can keep it flat, that sometimes helps to just tuck those under if you have them. Having an adjustable chair that does have a strong back does help in addition. But just having those things, so many of us are struggling in offices where they never even updated that. And that's a reasonable ask. And that doesn't require a lot of hoops to jump through for your physical therapy department to get an order from OcHealth to do an ergonomic assessment of the workplace. This was so popular at one of the hospitals where I was because pathology, right? They use a lot of microscopes, and one of the people there, you know, got an ergonomic assessment, and then all of a sudden the entire department got one. And it kind of informed, they really changed a lot of the equipment because none of the people really fit the equipment that they had. So that's another way to do it for cover, because once that prescription's written, they're required to fulfill that, and they're required to come up with an action plan for you as part of how they respond. So this just shows it in different angles, but you can see there's support, you're in a neutral, you're lined up with your ear over your shoulder, over your hip in the seated position, which is puts you in a neutral for most people. And this is the wrong way to be sitting at your office doing this, okay? So this, you know, your chair isn't at the right level, you're leaning forward, you know, you're tightening or shortening these pectoral muscles. That's a problem. You've closed your hip angle, so those flexors are tight, and you're kind of like almost turning into a ball shape. That's a problem because that weakens your extensor muscles so that you lose the ability over time to stay in that neutral posture. You lose strength and endurance to be able to do that for your career. And so I don't know how else to show you, but some of these kind of good graphics, I just wanted to share them. So, you know, this is a common thing. Everybody has these varidesks where you can go up and down. It's a popular holiday gift now to get this. But, you know, in a seated position, this is what you should be looking at so that you're not in that forward neck posture for your eyes. And eyes have a lot to do with it. So you want to try to get that back so that you're in that neutral zone where you have a 20-degree angle difference and the screen is far enough away. This is how this looks. I know sometimes people have that middle position or a chair like that in the OR. So this is how this would look. This isn't just for office workers. This is if you had any industry where somebody's working with a task, a manual task at a table station. Okay? So this is a reference for you to be able to use and understand. And you can see how the standing one, the people are lined up, just like the doctor was saying here, and how the elbows are supported and in those postures. So these are some of the things you could ask for. Oh, sorry, it's not a great slide how that's done. But, you know, one of the reasons I'm here is, you know, how do you activate, response to this? And in young physician section, I had so many doctors coming up and saying, like, hey, Dr. Jones, you know, it's a great thing that you talked about that, you know, recent, resolution we just had on a work case. But, you know, I wanted to ask you a question. I'm really scared. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll ask a question. I'm really scared. And I'm like, oh, what are you scared about? Well, I'm getting my neck done. Okay? Now, this is under 40. I have so many people in there who are in specialties like ENT or surgery, and they're like, for somebody to say to me, I can't feel my hand, and I'm getting my neck done in 2 weeks, that's a terrible, you know, we don't even see this in pro athletes, okay, we really don't, for them to be having that situation. So I'm just trying to thinking of things I could do. So it just like personally bothers me that I'm concerned. So I was reaching for solutions, so I went back, and I'm in engineering school now to be able to do some more. So I'm at University of Illinois with engineering. And so I have, my startup. And then I think nationally there's some things happening. So National Academy of Medicine is coming up with a lot of this physician wellness and resiliency. They tend to be looking right now at lagging indicators, like they're very concerned about the physician suicide rate. In engineering, we really look at leading indicators and prevention. That's my specialty, is a prevention-based. So I'd like to maybe, make a contribution this way. Maybe we can together in this body. So these are some of the infographics if you go to that. And then there's been some papers coming forward. You know, there's a surgical labor shortage that's projected. And people need to understand, these are some of the articles that will come out in JAMA on this. So you need to have an awareness. This could help you with your ammunition for those conversations with administration or your safety team to affect change where you work. And then this is one of the more, amazing breakthrough studies. So, but you have to realize this is a meta-analysis where they had to reach far and wide to try to find in the literature a whole bunch of things and then come up with a generalized response to get data just through these are analytical tools where they came up with this. So, but this is a really good paper on it. It just came out right at the beginning of the year, and it's a prevalence of work-related musculoskeletal disorders among surgeons and interventionalists. So I would highly recommend taking a look through that. It hits almost every surgical specialty. So We're really happy to also try to also be able to get through. This is a breakthrough piece of a resolution that's supposed to get legislation through. So this is not only trying to address, you know, understand and study, but when I was applying for different grants with my engineering company from the government, you know, I thought this was a great idea to do something to affect change. And when I called, you know, I didn't get some of these, and so I called. You get a chance to call the program director, you know, about a month after you get your response back. They're like, yeah, it was great. Everybody thought the idea was really great. And, yeah, you know, I had two people from my own family have to leave OB-GYN because they hurt their neck and they couldn't use their arm anymore. So I'm talking to the head of one of these agencies. And he said, this needs to be done. And I'm like, okay, that's great. Well, we kind of need, you know, some budget to be able to do that. That's why I applied for an I-Corps, you know, an SBIR grant to do it. And, you know, when I asked the person in education who had reviewed it, you know, he said, well, I'm not so sure. You know, seriously, why do you need money? What kind of problems could doctors possibly have? And if I'm calling a national, you know, agency like NIH or NSF, and that's the response I'm getting because we don't have better data than this, we put in a clause when we got this through that they have to fund research in this. So that was the only solution I could think to try to compel change from the agencies. There is National Institute of Health, you know, musculoskeletal division, there's eye division, there's craniofacial division, there's aging division, there's a National Institute for Nursing. We don't have anything. So that was what I thought maybe would help us out. So this is your office. We're trying to make it better. And in summary, I just wanted to say thank you. It's been a privilege to be able to speak, and thank you very much.